Tonight's topic is a loaded topic. It's regarding the idea of the famous dilemma of freedom of choice versus the knowledge of Hashem. So we just recently read in the parsha, it says like this: Re'ei nosati lefonecho hayoim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu, you should see, I put forth in front of you es hachaim ve'es hatov, put life and good, ve'es hamoves ve'es hora, and death and evil. Uvocharto b'chaim, you should choose life. Leman tichye ato v'zarecho, choose life in order you and your descendants should also live. So on one hand, clearly the Torah says that there is a choice. We need to choose, uvocharto b'chaim, undebatable. On the other hand, we find in the Torah, Parshas Toldos in the Reishis, Chof Hei, Pasuk Chof Gimel, it says, when Rivka went to ask Hashem, why is it that she has the struggle going on inside her stomach? So it says, "Vayomer Hashem lo." Hashem told her, "Shnei goyim bevitlich." There are two nations in your stomach. Ushnei leumim mimeayich yiporedu. There'll be two different nations coming out from your innards. Rashi, based on Chazal, says, what is the pshat? What does it mean? Mimeayich yiporedu. Says Rashi, min hameayim heim nifrodim. They will be separated right away before they're born. Ze l'rishoy. One is heading towards wickedness. Veze l'tumoy. And the other one is heading to be righteous. So here clearly we see that there is prophecy, there's godly divine knowledge that you'll have two children. One of them will be righteous and one of them will be wicked. Now the...
It says
that? What? Rashi says that.
Rashi says that.
Right. Shnei le'umi mimeyayich yiporedu. The question really is...
No, that one will be evil, one will be good.
Yes, it says, Rashi says that.
Oh.
Right. So the question really is, Tam, in the Pshat and the Pasuk, it's hard to understand, you know, Rivka was bothered before, right? Rashi says, again, it's Chazal, that when she passed by an idol-worshipping place, then Esav was kicking. He wanted to get out. He wanted to join them. When she passed by a Beis Medrash, believe it or not, there were Bote Medrashim in those days too, it says Shem and Aver, and the Talmidim had places where they had, thank you very much, they had places where they had, they studied spirituality, Mitzvahs Bnei Noach and so on, and other Mitzvahs Chazal say that Avraham Avinu, the Ovois, the Mois kept the Torah before it was given. But when she passed by a Beis Medrash or a holy place, Yaakov wanted to go out. But she didn't realize that she has two babies. And later on she was told, you'll have two babies. One righteous and one wicked. Well, what was she so happy about? She heard that one of them would be wicked. But the answer is, it's relatively to her worry. She thought she had one kid. It was completely mixed up. It's crazy. He's both. That really worried her. One righteous and one wicked. It's also very sad, but at least one of them will not be going back and forth, which is, in a way, worse. Okay. There are different pshatim in it, obviously. But for the purpose of our discussion, we clearly see that there is a problem. On one hand, the Torah says that you have freedom of choice, and there's a mitzvah, ubuchart ubachayim, you should choose life, you should choose between good and bad. And here the Torah tells us that Hashem knew in advance that ze l'rishoy veze l'tumah. I want to point out that it doesn't say here the names. It says one wicked and one righteous. It doesn't say which. In fact, Yitzchok thought that Esav was the more righteous one, right? He had more potential to be righteous. That's why he wanted to give him the boches. We're not going to go into that. But from that pasuk, simply, right, we see that there is a problem. So before we continue, I'd like to have a little bit an introduction of what does it mean, uvocharto b'chaim, that the Torah speaks about. The Torah puts together, bundles together, chaim and toiv, and moves and ra. Doing a seder mitshuva, we add additions in our davening. We say zochreinu lechaim, among other additions, zochreinu lechaim melech chofetz b'chaim. Remember us to life, a king who desires life. In other words, the definition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that context is Melech Chofetz B'chaim, a king who desires life. It's interesting that when David HaMelech wants to describe the ultimate righteous person, he says, Mi Ho'ish HaChofetz Chaim. Who is that Ho'ish, the person? The person, the ideal person, is a person who desires life. Oyhev yomim, he loves each day, liroistoiv, to see good. That's the description of a righteous person. How so? Because chaim represents godliness. Moves represents the antithesis of godliness. We have to understand that in the world of spirituality, there is no concept of death. Why? Because by definition, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, is infinite. Everything that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu naturally is infinite too. The only finite existence is only in this limited world, which we call Olam Hazeh, Olam Hazeh, this world. Death is a product of evil. Because, as we said, Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains in the Broche, Yoitzer Oir Uboire Choshech, Hashem formed light and created darkness. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, as we mentioned before, says light was in existence all along, because in the spiritual world there is light. But Hashem only had to transform it from spiritual light into physical light. That's why it's called Yoitzer, which is Loshon Tzura, Loshon, a language of formation. When it comes to Choshech, to darkness, it's creation, because in the spiritual world, there is nothing lacking. Darkness is a lack of light. In the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no darkness. Darkness was created for the sake of this world. Evil does not exist in the spiritual world. It was created, as Yeshayahu Hanavi says, Yoitzer Oir Uboirei Ra. Kadosh Baruch Hu created evil for a temporary purpose to serve in this world as a contrast to the Toiv. Okay. And therefore, in order to enable freedom of choice, Kadosh Baruch Hu created two contrasts. One came from the world of spirituality, transformed into physical light. And the other one came from this world, from the creation of this world, which is Choshech Oilom Azeh Doimel Elaylo, Chazal say, this world is compared to darkness of the night by comparison to the Oilom Abo, to the world of spirituality, which, by the way, Oilom Abo, unlike most people, translated the world to come, it is incorrect. The Oilom Abo is not the world to come. The Oilom Habo is the world that already came. I once explained as a beautiful vort, a Zionistic vort from the Satmar Rebbe. Can you imagine? You ever heard such a thing? The Satmar Rebbe has a beautiful Zionistic vort. Somebody asked the Satmar Rebbe Zatzal, a great person, I was zecher to know him when he was alive. He loved Jews passionately, unlike what many people think. So the Satmar Rebbe was asked, why do we say Leshono Habo Birushalayim Abnuyo? Next year in Jerusalem. He said, why not this year? Why do we have to do it next year? It says Mashiach can come any day. He said, Leshono Habo, next year in Yerushalayim. Satmar Rebbe was very sharp. So he said, the question is indicative that the one who asked the question doesn't know Lashon Kodesh, doesn't know Hebrew. I said, why? He said, Lashon Kodesh, there's a klal. And Rashi says it, there's a pasuk that says, Vehine Rochel Bitoi Bo Imatzoin. When it says Bo, it means she already came. And then it says a pasuk, Vehine Rochel Bitoi Bo'o. If the emphasis is in the Aleph, Bo'o means she's about to come. He says, Poshet, it's a wrong translation. The Mechilas Kvoidom of all the translators of Hebrew to English. He says it's a mistake. It's not Leshono HaBo'o Birushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. It's Leshono HaBo'o Birushalayim, the year that already came in Jerusalem. It's the same thing, Oilom HaBo is not the world that needs to be created, is will come. Oilom Habo, Chazal says that Oilom Habo was created before Oilom Hazeh. Because Oilom Habo, the emphasis is on the base, the world that already came into being. We are just not there. In reference to us, it is not, we're not there yet. So we refer to it as the world to come. But in reality, it's the world that already came. Okay? But in any case, the idea is that the spiritual world does not have the concept of death. Death, evil, was introduced to the world for the sake of this world, which is temporary in nature. It's very important to understand. When we say, in Yishtabach, we say, Melech Keil Chei Ha'ilomim. Some people mix it up, they say, Keil Chei. Keil Chei Ha'ilomim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is eternal. Chei Ha'ilomim. So, therefore, by definition, evil is tzimtzum, is finite. Evil has a limitation. Ra, moves are limited, because they are temporary realities. Chaim, life, in essence, is eternal, just like Toiv is eternal. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Toiv Umeitiv. It says, Hoidu Lashem Ki Toiv. You should thank Hashem because it is good. But there's another passage that says, Ki Toiv Hashem Le'olam Chasdoi. The Hoidu Lashem Ki Toiv goes both ways. Thank God for it is good. thank God because He is good. Ki toiv Hashem le'olam chasdoi. Because Hashem is good, that's why His kindness is forever. Because no, there's nothing by HaKadosh Baruch Hu which is temporary. Ki toiv Hashem, because Hashem is good, therefore His chesed is le'olam. It's not finite. Okay? Very important to understand that too. Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, which we are just concluding now before the winter, Chazal say, She'ein lecho ben choirin, elo mi she'oisek betalmoter. There's no free person in the world except one who studies Torah and obviously then is involved in mitzvahs. But the question is, it doesn't make sense, right? What do you call secular Jews? Secular Jews you call chofshi, right? Chofshi, because he's free. We are never not free, because we keep the Torah mitzvahs, and they are free. That's from their perspective. But in reality, Chazal teaches it's exactly the opposite. So how can you say that a person...
Frei.
What?
In Yiddish, you say frei.
Frei. Frei is also free, right? So how can you say that they're free and we are bound, and Chazal tell us it's exactly the opposite? The Chora, seemingly, they're right. They're free to do whatever they want. They can eat in any restaurant. And we, Nebuch, unfortunately, are stuck with the kosher recipes and not allowed to do some things on Shabbos and other things. We are limited, right? So what's the Ben Choyrin? Where is the Ben Choyrin? There's a famous marshal about a fellow that was for some reason raised in a cave, didn't see the outside world for many years, and upon coming out he notices this creatures around him. He looks at one creature and he sees Nebuch, unfortunately, has very thin legs. And it carries a tremendous amount of weight on those two thin legs. And the guy looks at this creature and he feels so bad for this creature. Nebuch, unfortunately, thin legs have to carry such a big body and bulges on its side. But a few moments later, this creature, which was obviously a bird, spreads its wings and it soars up all the way to the sky. And then suddenly he realized that he's not so poor, he's not so Nebuch after all. The heavy bags that seemingly was a burden on this creature was nothing other than the enablers of the rise to the skies. The mitzvahs that we have is really a means of uplifting ourselves. Who is the real free person? Who is real free? The person who doesn't have wings, cannot fly, or the bird that can fly? But that's on the simple level. On the deeper level, it goes much further than that. Because the idea of being free, of not being obligated to do anything, is the antithesis of spirituality. Mitzvahs, Torah, is the connections, the lifeline that connects us to the world of spirituality. There are two realities in this world. There is the finite reality and there is the spiritual reality. If one attaches himself to Gashmias, to materialism, then he is by definition stating, I am finite, and all I have is that limited existence of the now. When I die, I'm gone. The person who connects himself with Talmud Torah, or with spirituality, with mitzvahs, is attaching his wires, so to speak, are attached to the source of life. And therefore, the more attached you are, the more you are connected to infinity. That's why, Ein lecho ben choirin, elam shereisim b'tamoter. someone who attaches himself, becomes part and parcel of spirituality, that person is really free, because freedom means being not limited. The person who is materialistic is limited. It appears as if he is free, but in reality he connects himself with the finite existence of this world. And one who connects himself with spirituality becomes really free in the sense of unlimited, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Ein Sof without limitation. Okay, that's as words of introduction to the topic that we're about to discuss. Rabbi Chaimichael Tkachinsky wrote a beautiful book that unfortunately is a hidden treasure. I highly recommend it for people to read. People think that the Gesher HaChaim, the bridge of life, has to do with the laws of mourning, of death. It is true only two parts. But the third part, the Chelek Gimel, is philosophy of life. It is one of the most amazing books that I've ever seen, written by a Yerushalmi Talmid Chochem that was well aware of the modern world around him in a fascinating way. It was lived over 50 years ago. Yeah, incredible Talmid Chochem. So he writes in the Sefer in Gesher HaChaim something which is very powerful. He says, if you will look at the person, when you say I, what do you mean I? How do you define the I? Right? What do you say? You know, I always say, what's I, my nose, I, my toes? Who is the I? Right? Imagine that you have a person who weighs 600 pounds. Sitting next to a person who weighs 100 pounds. You ask the question, who is more of a human being? Right? What's the question? Take out your calculator. 600 is 6 times as much as 100. I think that they should have voting rights, 6 voting rights, because it's 600 pounds. If 100 pounder can have, right? So what's the answer? The answer is, it's a ridiculous suggestion, right? Everybody knows that. Why? Because deep down, we all know that the body is not representative of the eye. So what is that eye? The same would be, let's say, God forbid, if somebody lost an arm or a leg, is he less of a human being? The answer is absolutely yes, if you're talking about physical terms. But somebody would have to be completely insane to think that a person who is missing an arm or a leg, chas v'sholem, is less of a person? It's ridiculous. So what does it say? We all deep down know that the body doesn't represent the eye. So what then is the eye? So Chaimichael Tkachinsky goes to different suggestions how one would define the eye, and it comes down to one conclusion. There is nothing that belongs to the human being other than one thing. He says the whole eye is really concentrated in the koyach habchir. It's the only thing that we have. Nothing is ours. Nothing. Our wisdom is a gift of Hashem. Our health is a gift of Hashem. The only thing that is up to us and represents the I is me being able to choose. Koyach habchir. That's the only. Everything else is bottom of it. There's nothing there. It's a brilliant description of what is the I. And Mimele, and therefore, if this is true, and it is, then that means that without Bechire, without the freedom to choose, we are gone. There's nothing. We have nothing. Zero. And therefore, you'll see that there is not one Jewish philosopher, there's not one legitimate opinion in Judaism that says that a person's actions are predestined. One who believes that is poshet and apikeres, is a heretic, because the yesoida yesoides, the foundations of all foundations of Judaism, is that concept that a human being is a boicher, he is a koyach abchire, as the Torah says, uvochartu b'chaim. There is no dispute whatsoever. That's what confuses a lot of people. That nekuda, that point, is undebatable. There's nothing to talk about. A Jew that comes over to you and says, I don't believe in freedom of choice, I believe the world is predestined, you should tell him, my friend, you are a koifer b'chol ha-toira kulo. There's no reason for creation, there's no reason for you to exist, you're nothing but a robot. That is a terrible thing to say. So that is out of the question. What then is the dilemma? The dilemma really is not on the side of Bechira. Bechira we have for sure. Yediyeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also has for sure. So how do you bridge? That's the question. The emphasis of the question, though, I want to emphasize again, is on what and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and it doesn't contradict our power of Bechira. That is really the question. We'll deal with it.
Yeah, but as a nation, we don't have a Bechira.
Yes, we do.
We are his nation. It doesn't matter what we do. Where is his nation?
We had a Bechira, and we chose. Once we chose, we have no more Bechira in that area.
God chose us.
In that particular area, we don't have a choice anymore. We had a choice in the beginning. Once our foreparents have agreed, we lost that choice. Once you make a choice, you made a choice. You can't go back on your choice, especially in such an important thing. But yes, at this point, we don't. Many times after you choose, you know, to amputate someone's hand, the choice is gone. You know what I mean? After you make a choice, yes, the choice is limited, not gone, but limited. That area, you don't have choice anymore. Thank you very much. Okay. So that is, I believe, one of the most important points to clarify in today's generation, where people are very confused, especially when they hear all about from different professors confusing things, confusing statements. So that is clear. That's not even a topic of discussion. We are going to discuss really the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I also want to emphasize that not knowing the answer to this question, nish gefarlach, not the end of the world. If after tonight's discussion you still come out confused about this point, you can sleep well. Because many people are not clear about this point, including great people. But I would like to clarify to the degree possible what is the dais of the great minds, the great tzaddikim, the great Talmid Chacham over the generations. That's really what I would like to accomplish tonight. In the Rishonim, there are two schools of thought about this dilemma. There are many different variations, which we don't have the luxury of time to really analyze each one of them, but I wanted just to touch upon the two general directions of how you deal with this issue of Yediyeh versus Bechira. It's well known, the machlokes, the dispute between the Rambam and the Raivad, anyone can look it up in Hilchos Deyos, where the Rambam begins to state that what we mentioned before, we discussed before, and the Rambam clearly, time and time again, makes clear that we shouldn't get confused, there is Bechira. He says, in reference to Yediyeh, he said words that the Raivad gets very unhappy with him. He says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's machshoves, it says, Loi machshevoisai machshevoiseichem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu functions on a totally different operating system than human beings. Therefore, he says, human beings will have a very hard time comprehending how is it possible for Hashem to know without mixing in into our decisions, and he leaves that at that. The Raivad complains bitterly about the Rambam, and he says, if you didn't know how to answer it, or you didn't want to answer it, don't open up a can of worms without closing it. That's what he says. He says in very sharp language, he complains about the Rambam. But what is very interesting, that the Raivad himself, after complaining about the Rambam, he says himself a mahalach, a way to look at it, and at the end he says, "V'kol ze einenu shoyve." I'm still not really fully explaining it. So obviously it's a difficult dilemma. Okay, this part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. But again, there is a school of thought that says like this: HaKadosh Baruch Hu is lemalo min hazman. Hashem is above time. It's something that humans have a very hard time relating to. Zman itself is a creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is Zman? What is time? Time is nothing more than the measurement of relativity between heavenly bodies, right? We know time because the earth rotates on its axis relative to the sun and relative to the moon, right? All those calculations, that's how time is established, at 24 hours. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is lemala min hazman. Therefore, it is not contradictory. Some explain it with a simplistic example, the following. Imagine that someone videotaped a sports game, right, on TV. And someone who did not watch the original game is now watching the movie, right? So he's looking at the movie. He asked his friend, please don't let me know the results. I don't want to know. When this fellow looks at the movie, the sports game, it's the first part of the game. The results of the game were already decided. He, the person who is watching the movie, has no clue about the results. Not only that, further than that, the people that you are watching now, right? Imagine that it's real time, right? The players themselves at this point don't know what the results. They can still improve. But the one who watched the movie before knows in advance. So his knowledge does not interfere with their ability to choose, right? Maaseh, they are still choosing. So one can know in advance what the results will be without interfering in the power of choosing, of choice, of those people who are playing the game now. One way to explain it. So time is a very interesting thing. There is a way to look at it this way. That's one school of thought, right? One school of thought says that Hashem functions on a different plane, on a different operating system, and it's very hard for us to relate to it, but it is possible to know the result without interfering in the freedom of choice. That's a little bit more difficult for us to comprehend, as both the Rambam and the Raivad both agree. But there is a completely different school of thought of other Rishonim. And they say something very interesting. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the human being is being introduced to this world, at the very moment of conception, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is goyzer on the tipo. He says, Tipesh, Chochom, Oshir, Oni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, they'll have tendencies to be a fool, to be smart, and so on. It's all predetermined. But Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu goyzer tzadik oy rosho. The Gemara says clearly, there's no such a thing as HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this person will be a tzadik or a rosho. Question is, what happened with with Esav and Yaakov, right? So again, not so simple. The Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu was punished that he prevented his daughter from marrying Esav, because she had the power to turn Esav around. If you look in the Lashon of Rashi that we called before, it says, meaning that they have tendencies. It doesn't mean to say that they will act upon those tendencies. The Gemara says something fascinating. The Gemara says that people are born with tendencies, both good and bad. The Gemara Lamosho says that some people are born with tendencies to be a thief. Others are born with tendencies to be a murderer. Says the Gemara, what should one do if he feels that he has a desire for blood, for murder? Should become a shochet, should become a moyel, should become a surgeon, should become something that he can channel his taive, his murderous tendency into a positive channel. When it comes to emotional today, it's a sensitive topic. It's a no-no topic about homosexuals. Again, there's a lot of disputes among the scholars and so on. But as I once mentioned to a homosexual who says to me that the Torah says terrible things about homosexuals, I say to him, it's absolutely false. Torah does never says anything negative about someone who has a tendency for homosexuality. We acknowledge that. And we feel bad for the person that has to struggle with it. The Torah only says don't act upon those tendencies. But the fact that you have tendencies like that, we feel for you, would like to help you out in any way we could. And as I said last time, we spoke about that no Jew was ever killed in court because he committed even a homosexual act or anything, or was Michal Shabbos. He only was punished when he did it in public in front of two kosher witnesses who warned them, and he said, in spite of that, I am going to do it anyway to spite the system. So the thing, the guy is responsible, you know. But nobody was ever killed or even attempted to be killed for anything that he did, not in a rebellious way, in a private way. Is it forbidden? Of course it is forbidden. It's punishable by death because it's a very serious offense. But again, back to the idea. Tendencies are there, and in fact, one who has tendencies to be a Rosha, and he overcomes that, he is a greater tzaddik than the tzaddik who didn't have to deal with that. There is a very controversial Tiferes Yisrael. Very controversial. Tiferes Yisrael says a fascinating story about Moshe Rabbeinu. Tiferes Yisrael says there was a king in Africa, in a far away land, that heard about the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he also knew the Chochmas HaParzuf, right? The chokhmah of looking in the face and knowing its qualities, its attributes. So the Tiferes Yisrael says that there was a great royal court artist. The king wanted to know at least how Moshe Rabbeinu looked like. Right? So he paid the money. He should travel to the Midbar where Klal Yisrael was there, and he should see Moshe Rabbeinu and should paint Moshe Rabbeinu and give him a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he went, and he came back with a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the king looks at it, and he says, there's something terribly wrong. He took experts, other people who were experts in Chochmas HaParzuf, in the Chochmah of the facial features, and he told them, look, Moshe Rabbeinu has a reputation of being a very righteous person, and the facial features of this picture are so terribly mean and evil that it's impossible. So that they decided that the artist is a thief. He went someplace, he took the money, pocketed the money, he made a painting of a person. It's not Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But again, there is versions of the story, I'm just telling you to the best of my memory from the first Israel, about this incident. So it says that to verify the painter, the artist claimed that he really was there and he was innocent and he did everything, it's really Moshe Rabbeinu. So they decided to send another delegation to verify who is saying the truth. Is the sages who are saying that he's a liar or the painter? So they came back to the desert, they saw Moshe, they saw that the painter was absolutely accurate. So they approached Moshe Rabbeinu and they asked him, how is it possible that your facial features are features of a Adam Rosha, of a wicked person? And the Maisi, we know that you're a righteous person, how is it possible? So the way the story goes in the first Israel, that Moshe Rabbeinu told him, that's true. By nature, by my facial features, I could have been the biggest Rosha. But I worked on myself, and I improved myself, and I became Moshe Rabbeinu. It's very controversial, this Tiferes Yisrael, who quotes an unknown source for this story, because it's a little problematic, because in the Torah is mashma that Moshe Rabbeinu was light when he was born, and he looked, you know, he was... What?
It says in the story of the Marvel at the end where it says Big
Hashem. Beshagom uboso. It's mashma in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had a special light, special spirituality. So people doubt whether the source of the first Israel was accurate or not. But the point why I mentioned it to you tonight is not for verifying the story, it's true or not, but to point out the concept, the idea that it is possible for a person who was destined to be a Roshe to become the world's greatest tzaddik, right? That's the Nekudah. So what does the other school of thought say, which is basically the Rashbatz in his Sefer Mogen Ovois, the Ma'aryal Ashkar in his Sefer Merkeves HaMishneh, the Ralbag and others follow the following train of thought. And they say like this: HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, Masheyeh B'Soif HaMaiseh, what is going to be at the end. I'm going to quote to you what the Rashbatz writes. He says like this: ובספר זה בחלק השלישי ממנו תירצנו קושיו זו בו זה. In this book, in the third segment, we have dealt with this question, which is the question we're talking about. שהדבורים יש לו אמפונים לטוב ולרע. That those things have ways to interpret it into good or into bad. וזה גילו רבי סיילו זכרנו ברוך בפרק חלק סנהדרין, he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, קוף זיין עמד א', the Gemara says, ראויו הויסו בשבע לדוד. The story of בשבע and דוד, בשבע was destined anyway to marry דוד. So what was wrong? אלו שאוכלו פגו, which is an expression meaning he hastened the process before it was supposed to happen. Vehine okay yoideya sefer maase. This is a quotation from the Rashbatz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew the end of the story. Shei kocheno. Veloze oiso ruhi oloi. She was appropriate for him. Veilu himtin lo. Kemi shemamtin ateeno ad shetis bashel. And if we would only wait a little longer until it would be ripe. Just like the fig has to ripen on the tree, ולא יאכלנו בעוד הפגו, you shouldn't eat it when it's still unfinished, when it's not really proper to eat it, it doesn't taste good, it's not so healthy. הויו נויסו בהתר, דוד המלך anyway would marry בשבע. That's the way it was supposed to be. והוא הויו עוץ ברגלו, but he hastened the process, and he ran ונוסו קוידם מיס הסוריה. And he married her before the death of Uriah, B'techoshev lo lova v'chet. And that's why it was a sin. Even though the Gemara says it wasn't a sin, be'etzem ha'feishas ish, because she was divorced, he gave her a get before, but in his level, it was considered a sin. The Gemara says, kol ha'imer David choto in olotoye, it was not chas v'sholam ha'iser ha'feishas ish, but it was inappropriate for a person on his level to do it that way. So he said like this, v'razal limdunu al sages taught us be'in dovor zem be'inyan ho itztagninus. As far as what is called in English, itztagninus is astrology. Right, astrology. So he says, he brings the inyan, the Gemara says in Shabbos, daf kuf nun vov omed aleph, hay man de bemadim yegvar oshidome. That's the Gemara we mentioned before. That one who was born in Mazal Madim will be a person who sheds blood. Oy ganve, oy umne, or a thief, and so on, it goes on and on. But he concludes like this, Arei shoreshus nesuno beyad ho'odom lehatois adovor ayodua besoif ha'maise. It is permitted, in other words, there's the freedom of choice for in the hands of a person, to tilt, to direct the thing which we know will be at the end. It depends what it is, either because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it destined or because of the mazolois, he can turn it lemitzveh oy laaveiro. Ubozeh yiskaye mama Rabbi Akiva, and with that you'll fulfill the statement of Rabbi Akiva she'omar, called Sofui Voroshus Nesuno. And he goes on, I don't want to take the time to go into all the details, but there's a very long, beautiful piece of Rashbats. Yeah? Yes? Because the Gemara says Bathsheba's husband, Uriel, was a Moirid B'Malchus. If you read the whole story and you read the Gemara, so you'll see that Uriel deserved to be killed outright. David HaMelech, in fact, was nice to him in a way that he didn't kill him outright. So he did it in such a way that it would look like he died by war. He was a Moirid B'Malchus. He rebelled against the kingdom, as you can see from the text if you read it carefully. He was Moirid B'Malchus. He deserved to be killed. Okay, so that's you're asking a very good question, but the Gemara deals with that. That's a good point. So, I would like to bring it down to a level which is perhaps more tangible. Okay. When I had to explain this concept to non-observant Jews, I used the following moshul to explain what the Rashbats and the Mari Alashkar say. Basically, it goes like this. Imagine for a moment that you are in a, you took a course of computer science, right? The teacher taught 25 students computer science, good heads, and he was able to teach them in a matter of 2 years 20 different computer languages. You know, computers have different ways how to write the program. 20 different ways to write programs. Now it's the end of the course. So the professor comes into the class and says, I'm giving you now the final, and this will determine your grade. This is the ultimate test. I want you to know like this. I'm giving you an assignment that I know that all of you will be able to follow. That's not the question. For instance, I want you to write a program which at the end will appear on the screen, Hoidu Lashem Kitoif. Right? That's what I want you to write. Now, I know you, you know me, and we both know that you can do it. There's not even a question. But I am not interested in the end result because I know the end result in advance. What I'm going to examine at the end of the process, I'm going to look into the ways and means that you employed in getting to that result. did you efficiently combine the different tricks that I taught you in order to get the final message on the screen? That's the test. I'm not testing you on the results. The pshat is like this. According to this Mahalach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything and could know everything. But as the language of the Raivad says that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to have Bechire as a method that a person should be able to gain eternity and eternal bliss, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Heisir HaMemsholo Miyodoy. Of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu can know everything. He does know everything. Nothing in the world happens without him. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so great that when he wants to remove his knowledge, he can do that too. That's what the Raivad says be'etzem. Heisir HaMemsholo Miyodoy. The control was given away. The knowledge of the actions are all known by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The results are all known. But the methods are completely up to us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not intervene. And according to Rashbatz, it's much that he doesn't even know because he doesn't want to know.
You're saying that's the famous,
Rashbatz.
It's like the famous question about if Hashem makes a
stone. Right. People like the philosopher, I like to ask questions like, right? There's a lot of things that we cannot grasp in our human mind, but yes, it is the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu really he sort of limited himself, that's out the Kabbalah, the idea of Tzimtzum, in order to provide us with God. I once explained this Nakuda, it's a very interesting thing. I want to share with you a beautiful, deep thought. One of the wonders of Torah that no one really fully understands is the Inyan of Poro Adumo. Poro Adumo, everybody wonders. Shloimeh HaMelech says, Omarti Echkomo V'Yirechoyko Mimeni. The depth of Poro Adumo, no one really knows. Even after I will share with you the following thought, it doesn't mean that we know it. It means that we'll understand it a little better. As the Rachaim HaKodesh writes, that even though no one knows the ultimate answer to Poro Adumo, but you're allowed to try to understand it on your level. So let me show you an amazing thing, and you'll understand what I'm speaking about in regards to this idea of HaKodesh Baruch Hu limiting his knowledge in order to provide goodness for humanity. Okay? It's a very interesting, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, the mitzvah of Pur Revu. Mitzvah of Pur Revu. You have to have children. Also, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires us to be an Am Kodesh, a holy people, holy nation. What is strange about this mitzvah of Pur Revu? That it is impossible, halachically, for a parent to have a child without becoming Tomei in the process. Not shaykh. A man becomes tomei tumas keri, a woman becomes tomei tumas later. It's impossible not to become tomei. So listen to this fascinating mitzvah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who requires us to be always b'kedusha u'v'taharah, gives us a mitzvah in which we cannot fulfill it unless we become tomei. What's tumei? Tumei is a distance, a blockage between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person is Tomei, there's a blockage. He can't go into the Beis HaMikdosh. There's no prohibition to be Tomei. You're allowed to be Tomei. Unless a Kohen is not allowed to become Tomei. But a Jew is allowed to go to the Beis HaKvoros whenever he wants. He can go walk in a morgue. He can do whatever. Right? There's no problem. Tomei is not a prohibition. Tomei is only something which it creates a blockage of spirituality to some degree. A person is less connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires us as potential parents to do something which seems to be in contradiction of our goal. Why so? Because we are creating a new human being, right? And the Gemara says that you nase shutof lemaise bereshis. You become a partner to the creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a fascinating idea. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world, he introduced something which is the antithesis of himself. He introduced Ra, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu keveyochol, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu seemingly, as we can understand humanly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pure in the purest form that we can ever imagine. He is good in the purest, unadulterated level of purity and goodness. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruled that because the ultimate goodness calls for him to create something that he resents and is repulsive to him, which is evil, to enable us to get eternity. That's the ultimate chesed possible. To do something that you are not comfortable with in order to make someone else great and comfortable. That's, we don't begin to understand the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In creating this world, ki le'oilom chazdoi. Oilom is loshen nelom, it's hidden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's goodness reaches depth that we can't fathom. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is soinei ra, constantly commands us, uvi'arto robi kibar, I wanted to uproot evil from humans, and yet he himself created it. Why? To enable us to reach olam haba. Pilei ploim. It's truly mind-boggling. Now we can begin to understand a little bit of what it means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted not only to do that, but he's asking us, he's telling us, if you want to be God-like, be like me. Become Tomei. Become Tomei in order to create another life. Be exactly like what I did. I also supposedly keveyochol lowered myself in order to create you. You want to be like me? You want to be like me? Also lower yourself. For what? For the sake of giving life to others. That's the depth of the mitzvah of Purovu. To be mamish God-like. That's godlike. And mimele, that's why the Gemara says terrible things. Somebody is not oisik b'piriyo v'rivyo. Terrible things. Tipach atzmoiso. What do you mean? You're not godlike. You were created to be godlike, right? So that's the pshat in Pora Adumo. Pora Adumo is zois chukas ha-teiro. This is the ultimate rule of Torah. Because Torah, what is Pora Adumo? What is the one of Pora Adumo? You know, the Kohen, who is pure, is trying to purify someone who is impure, right? So the Torah says to him, friend, Kohen, if you want to purify someone else, you're going to become impure in the process. Are you willing to do that? And the Kohen says, yes, I'm willing. Zois chukas ha-Torah. This is all of Torah wrapped in that principle. The ultimate sacrifice for the other. Zois chukas ha-Torah. That's part, at least, of the secret of Pora Adumo. The Pora Adumo is that one is willing to become Tomei just to make his friend Tohel. It's a dangerous thing to do unless you're instructed to do so by the Torah. But you're not supposed to normally Ein oimrim lo'otom chatoi bishvil she'iske chavecho. That's not a general rule. But in exceptions, the Torah indicates to us, right? Like in the case of Pura Ravu, like in the case of Pura Adumo. That's the beauty of being godlike. To be so unselfish that even though spiritually I'm going to, temporarily of course, temporarily, limit myself, just like Rosh Baruch temporarily created Ra, we temporarily create Tumen. Create Tumen. It's truly a mind-boggling concept. You're creating a life. Right. Exactly. That's exactly. Right. And the answer is that that's not lowering yourself. That's the beauty of it. That when you save a life with someone on Shabbos, you didn't lower yourself. You won't mechal Shabbos. You're not called mechal Shabbos. You did a mitzvah. If you create a life, it's not a pshat. The Kohen who did the Po'adum didn't do. The opposite. When, if you do it properly, according to the instructions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then not only it's not, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't lower himself, in fact, the lowering, so to speak, is where you see his greatness. Right? The greatness is self-apparent from the lowering. It's so beautiful, very, very beautiful idea. Okay, so I want, in the little time that we have left, I want to introduce a larger question that is more difficult to understand on the background of what we have discussed so far. This problem, the problem of knowledge versus freedom of choice, is a much greater question, because the whole Torah, the entire Torah is really very, very difficult to understand. Because the Gemara tells us that the Torah was created before this world was created. We all know the statement that this world really is nothing but a result of the blueprint, which was the Torah. The Torah was created, the Gemara says clearly, before the world was created. What does it mean? The Ramban asked the Kashe, how is it possible that the Torah was written before the world was created? That means that all the stories in the Torah are predestined. Reuven sinned and Yosef was sold by his brothers, and Klal Yisrael did the eagle before. It was all written in the Torah before. So the whole Torah sounds like a Hollywood production, right? It's a terrible thing. How is it possible? Of course, that's not the case. So the Ramban says, the whole Torah, you have to ask, doesn't make sense according to that. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows in advance, and you tell me that the Torah was written before, then what's going on? This dilemma, by the way, is presented in a different angle by the Gemara itself on a segment of the Torah. We'll see soon how beautiful it fits in. It's mind-boggling. The Gemara wonders, it's a Gemara Menoches, Daf Lamed, Omed Aleph. Who wrote the last 8 verses in the Torah? It's really an enigma. It's something which is difficult to understand. It doesn't make sense. Because the Torah writes about the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So who wrote it? If the whole Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, how is it possible that Moshe wrote he wrote about his own death? So the Gemara says two ways to answer it. One way is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to him, and he v'Moshe koisev bedema, and he was writing it while tears came out of his eyes. He was writing about his own death, his own eulogy. That's one way. And the other opinion says, no, the last 8 pesukim in the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu did not write. It was written by Yeshua. Which is very bothersome, because we know the whole Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll share with you the answer of the Vilna Gaon, which is truly mind-boggling. But in order to understand that, we first have to understand what the Ramban says. The Ramban says an amazing thing. Says the Ramban that when we say that the Torah was created before, we human beings are one-faceted beings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is multifaceted. Chazal tell us that Shivim Ponim LaTorah, the Torah has 70 different layers of depth. There's more than 70, but 70 major layers of depth. I don't know if you saw once the, you know, they call the magic eye. It's like a painting that is computer generated. When you look at it, you see a garden of roses or whatever the picture is. But if you focus it like for 90 seconds or 120 seconds straight, really focus on it, all of a sudden it jumps at you, you see a completely different picture. Did you ever try that? It's called the magic eye. Kids love it. It's very interesting. That has only two layers. The Torah has 70 such layers. The more you look at it, all of a sudden you say, oh, I saw before, was not the real thing. And you look more, and it's deeper and deeper and deeper. Okay. So, says the Ramban like this. Imagine that the entire Torah is in front of you, written as one long sentence. In Hebrew, the way it works is that what makes the word into a word and what makes the letter into a letter is not only what you write, it's also the space in between. In Hilchas Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzos, if one letter touches the other letter, it's possible. Not a kosher Sefer Torah. But why? Because the definition of a letter, that it has to have parchment around it. It's the not only the black, it's the white which surrounds the black. That's what the Gemara says. Each letter, each word also. If let's say the Sefer wrote two words too close to one another without a space, sufficient space, it's also not kosher. Because it reads differently, right? Says the Ramban that when the Gemara says the entire Torah was written before creation, it means that all the letters of the Torah were one long thing, all mixed together. And it was up to humanity how those letters will be organized into words and sentences. A multifaceted option or options that is able to come out of this one long sentence. It could have been written that Klal Yisrael was tempted to do Egel Azov and they decided against it. If we would write, there's ways to manipulate the letters. So all the potential, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows all the potentials. But the ultimate decision is given to the people. And the way they decide, that's how the statement is being separated. That's what the Ramban says. So the Vilna Gaon, my Zaydi, Hashem Revichas to the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon writes in Sefer, it's brought down in Sefer Meloy Roim, a fascinating pshat in the Gemara that we learned before. That Gemara that argues about what happened to the last 8 psukim in the Torah, he says like this. The Vilna Gaon says, no machlokes here. The machlokes is only on the style, not on the substance. He says like this. Everyone agrees that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the entire Torah. The machlokes is only whether Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it mixed. Right? He says what it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them Moshe Koisev Bedema in Zroim there is a concept Medameya. Medameya means could be tears. Medameya is also mixed. When you mix Chulin and Truma, it's called Medameya. So he says what the Gemara means to say Moshe Koisev Bedema, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to write it in a mixed fashion. And the other opinion only explains how it happened. And Yeshua came later on, and Yeshua separated them. So they were written, but not in a usable, understandable format. Moshe Rabbeinu came and wrote it, Bedema, the same style, the way the Torah was written before Briyas Olam. And Yeshua was the one to separate them. That's why it's credited. The Shaila, who do you give credit? Did Moshe write it? Does he get the credit? Or Yeshua gets the credit? Because even though Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, but it was not readable, it was not usable. So because Yeshua was the one who separated after the event, according to prophecy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why it's considered that Yeshua wrote it. But certainly Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah. There's no question about it. So it's a fascinating thing. Okay, in conclusion, I'll just say the following. I want to re-emphasize what we learned tonight. Tonight we really discussed some deep concepts. It requires machshava and thought. But what we really need to remember over and over again, that the question of Yediyah and Bechiras we started off is not a question of Bechira. Chas v'shalom, God forbid, anyone that says that we are not free to choose freely between good and bad is denying the essence of Torah, period. Nothing to talk about. You're not allowed to say that, you're not allowed to think that. It's absolutely a no-no. That a person's Bechira is clearly written in the Torah. We read it last week in the Torah in Sefer Dvar, in the Parsha. The question, as I mentioned earlier, is about the Yediyah, and as we mentioned, the two general schools of thought about the Yediyah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where we could understand it, we can understand partially, understand it fully, the different opinions. But it's very important to understand that we are free. And I remember when I was a kid, I grew up, I'll give you my age, I grew up in the 50s, late 50s, and the early 60s, you know, there was a time the hippies were on. I remember seeing real hippies, you know. It was a very interesting thing. So the hippies wanted to be free. They wanted to be free. Freedom. Unfortunately, they learned the hard way, there's no such a thing. Because freedom is really in the mind of the beholder, basically. It's what's a chat free? You want to be free, right? You want to eat? You got to prepare your food. You have to. If you want to live, you have to do things. If you want to travel, you have to prepare means of travel. If you want to have friends, you have to take a shower, right? If you want to have a job, you have to apply for. Even everything is you have to. There's no life by itself, by definition, really carries with it the burden of having to do things. You may be able to choose which shampoo to take the shower with, which is soap, maybe, if you like it. Yeah? But that's not freedom. The freedom that people are really seeking comes from the very fact that we are godly beings. And the reason why humanity strives and aspires to be free, America is based on liberty, the concept of freedom, is because in essence it's a good thing. Because it comes from the godliness within us. A person hates to be limited because he's a Tzelem Elohim, and Elohim does not really fit with boundaries. Kodesh Baruch Hu has no boundaries. But instead of channeling that desire for no boundaries into the real area, into the arena of spirituality, people are confusing the whole thing, and they put all the efforts in being free, to be chofshi. It's a facade, because the more chofshi you are, the more you're free, so to speak, from spiritual obligations, you are connecting your essence with the finite world, which will carry you to no other place other than the grave, which will be final for the Rishoyim. But one who connects himself with spirituality is really free in the ultimate sense, because he is attaching himself with unbreakable ties and connections to the ultimate infinity. That's real freedom. Ayo Be'ezer Hashem, Shibizoicha to be Boicher Bachaim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should choose us to continue our lives with happiness. Ksir v'chasim etev. Thank you very much.
Everyone can help by stacking the chairs, that would be appreciated.